Welcome back for another helping of Oysters, Clams, and Cockles. I am your host, Ross Bolin, here with your other host, Mr. Barrett Dudley. And today we're talking about the Emmys, the 2021 Emmys a little.
Oi, Ross, did you watch the Emmys, mate?
You're doing the,
Fuck off then, you wanker.
Is that how he talks for real when he did the acceptance
no,
speech?
No, he's...
So does he sound anything like voice, Roy?
He sounds like Roy not doing the Roy voice. He sounds like just normal. He sounds like if Roy wasn't kind of doing a Batman thing.
It's the Batman thing. It's the same as Christian Bale. Like where he went a little too far with it, where you're like, well, now you've made it easy to do parody.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And like we've talked about, the voice is not something that I have noticed necessarily from season one to season two. I need to go back, do a little reconnaissance work here, and maybe there's just like a YouTube video putting one next to the other and like being like,
surely there is.
Here's the difference. But honestly, I'm just doing a Roy because Ted Lasso was the big winner at the Emmys.
Yeah.
So I'm just starting off the pod with a relevant call out.
Let me ask you a question.
How about that?
Did they crush the Emmys after season one? Because this...
No. This was for season one.
Oh, yeah, because we're still watching season two. Or did it just end?
I think the finale comes out on Friday.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about Ted Lasso toward the end of the show. Yeah, but the point is, specifically to the Emmys...
This was for season
so
one.
So this is season one that they were highly recognized for. Outstanding comedy.
Well, here's what I don't remember. The Emmys... I can't remember if last year's like show got pushed back or reset or rearranged. I don't really remember when last year's Emmys was.
I have no memory of the entire year.
And then the other weird thing is that the Golden Globes happen like early in the year, but it's for a lot of the same shows. So like Ted Lasso season one, which was wrapped up halfway through 2020 or whatever that was, already won a bunch of awards at the Golden Globes.
Right.
Which was like 6 months ago.
So it feels weird.
So this whole thing, like I don't have it sitting right in front of me, but like the Emmys year like includes stuff like Mare of Easttown, which doesn't feel like it was that long ago. It also includes Ted Lasso season one and I May Destroy You, stuff that feels like it was ages ago.
Another issue.
So it's a weird thing because it's like for the Emmys especially, it's like half 2020 shows and half 2021 shows.
Which has always been one of the confusing things about award season in general, but it's obviously even more confusing now that we've all lost track of even like the weekly calendar.
Time, yeah.
Much less seasonal.
The thing is, linear time is a construct, Ross.
It is, so, and a flat circle.
Yeah.
But yeah, one of the other kind of annoying things I've noticed is that the award titles, the names of the awards, the categories seem to change more frequently with the Emmys than anywhere else, to where I'm kind of like, as I'm reading through the list,
there
instance,
were some changes this year, I believe. The other thing that is exacerbating that phenomenon is that this year, more than ever before, and really, like the tide shifted here, but like the award that they saved for the end of the night, even this time around, was not best drama.
It was comedy.
No. It was best limited series, anthology, movie, or whatever that other category is. That was the stacked ass category this year.
But that was the finale? The final category?
Yes, so they ended with the category that included Queen's Gambit, which won, Mare of Easttown, I May Destroy You, and like a few others that were the big deal shows.
So the space that we spoke to kind of exploding.
Year.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. And also like it's this new wrinkle, right? Where we're like, well, Mare's talking about coming back for season two. So why did it get to go in limited series just because it said it was a limited series?
It's like, gotcha.
Like
we're running it back.
And if it does do a season two and gets more nominations, will it then have to move to drama?
To a different category?
To drama TV series because it's in a new season. Like it's doing a second season. So it's just like, this is it's just confusing because like, why is I May Destroy You different than Atlanta? And why is Mare of Easttown different than The Crown? And like these categories are just kind of a mess at the moment because of the changing television landscape where most of stuff right now, White Lotus, is that a drama series or a limited series?
It's a really good point. Like,
you know what
it's
I mean?
Not necessarily like, the Emmy's fault. The landscape of itself has shifted so much in just the past few years, so rapidly, Like, what are they supposed to do? I have another question for you, Barrett, if you will entertain it. Do you recall?
I'm here to entertain.
So you're a big Office guy, the Office. You were a big fan of The Office, one of the bigger fans of The Office, I know, I would say.
Yeah, okay.
When The Office was in its prime, The Office, or even at the beginning of it, The American Office, were they recognized as an Emmy-worthy television program? Was that...
Yes, pretty early on.
As a comedy show, right?
As a
So in the same way, here's my point. It feels like Ted Lasso is sort of elevating that space. Is it just because it's streaming and it's not on NBC that it feels that way?
Do you mean that it is?
It's taken almost more seriously, like as a piece of art or whatever, as opposed to like. The Office is streaming on, or you know, whatever. It was on NBC or whatever it was on.
That is because of the of again, this is all part of the shifting landscape. That is because Ted Lasso is like, while it is a feel good Bill Lawrence comedy, these guys made Scrubs. Remember, like it has a lot of connective tissue with something like The Office.
Scrubs is right there with The Office.
It boils
in that
down
category.
to an office place comedy, and it's got like the kind of the joy of a Parks and Rec, but it's on Apple TV, so episodes can be longer. The one that I just watched was, I think, 45 minutes long. They can curse. They can go to deeper and weirder places.
Darker places.
Content-wise. You know what I mean? Like, they can... So it is, in a sense, it's doing some of the things that we see on Fleabag, Atlanta, Barry, these other, like, shows that are quote-unquote comedies...
But high tier,
but
or
they're
whatever.
But they carry with them some of this prestige.
There it is.
They can do longer episodes. They can curse. They can do whatever they want. They're not just 21-minute like sitcoms. The way that we thought about them in the 90s, and the 2000s, and even most of the 2010s. And I'll say this. It's like, I believe that I'm right here that like prior to Ted Lasso, the comedy darling of the Emmys was The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. That's a 60-minute show. It's more like an hour-long drama, even. But it's
even
in there
more
with a comedy series.
Yeah.
And then before that was Modern Family's really long run.
And did Fleabag get one in there?
I don't think Fleabag won comedy series.
I feel like it may.
Maybe
have
it did.
Yet, but
maybe
I
it
can't
did.
Recall.
You might be right.
Like I said, it not even really a joke. Like 2020 destroyed my memory.
Phoebe Waller-Bridge did have that one night where she was winning everything.
She was bawling hard. Yeah,
and I don't remember if that was the Globes or the Emmys, but you might be right. But
regardless, yes, it has been more of like the artsy prestige.
Yeah, so that'll be
style.
And I think that's a question all around, because what the show that won all the awards for drama two nights ago was The Crown. That's a big Netflix, and that one again. We're changing characters. We're changing the cast every two seasons. So like. Where does that one actually belong?
Also, it feels like The Crown came out 4 years ago.
Yeah. The point is, like, going forward, is anything on network even, like, is it ever going to stand any real chance of winning anymore when you have stuff like Ted Lasso, Barry, Atlanta?
I don't think so.
Elevating, like you said. And, like, you know, is there really going to be any room for, like, a Blackish or Modern Family or Big Bang Theory, like those types of shows, and that's people are probably screaming at their car radios right now. I'm not putting Blackish and Modern Family in the same tier as Big Bang Theory. They are
kill them.
They're very clearly like better, more profound shows, but they are network comedies at the end of the day. And the question that I'm asking here is like, will those ever stand any chance of winning ever again? Now that the competition is Apple TV and Netflix and HBO Max and Hulu and FX and all these people making these really incredible, doing air quotes again, comedy shows that go way beyond comedy.
I want to blend this into a larger discussion about Ted Lasso as a whole, but first allow me to take care of some business. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? I can tell you, therapy, massive, massive help in this category. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist, and you can start communicating in under 48 hours. This is not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online. For so many of us who are looking for a way to access counseling and therapy from the comfort of our homes, or that have work schedules or kids that are demanding in a way that makes it pretty much impossible for you to have time for yourself to go carve out the time you need to get some self-care done, that's where BetterHelp comes in. The service is available for clients worldwide. There's a broad range of expertise available. And for a lot of people, it's that they can't find a good therapist that they like locally. Well, BetterHelp can help you find one that may not be locally available, or one that treats a specific category you're looking to get some help with that may not be locally available. So for those reasons, BetterHelp is better. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule a weekly video or phone sessions if you want. You don't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as you would with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily. Visit BetterHelp.com/dragon. That's Better H-E-L-P. And join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. So many people have been using BetterHelp that they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. Special offer for the Clam Fam. Our listeners get 10% off your first month when you go to BetterHelp.com/dragon today. 10% off your first month. BetterHelp.com/dragon. So, one of the things, Barrett, that I've noticed with Ted Lasso as I've been working my way through season 2. Is the cursing that you have referenced, and especially obviously with Roy, right? But,
oi, fuck off.
I don't know if I can get deep enough to do Roy. Fuck off. But the point being, the show very much is like The Office in vibes, and it's in the same, we've talked about this, it's a happy feel-good show overall. Yes, it has deeper storylines and more adult themes it explores, but in general, it feels like one of those shows, like a 30 Rock, The Office, the big dogs that have won a shit ton of Emmys historically, and that just in general is sort of like family friendly. Let me put it that way. Then you'll hear a fuck, or they'll explore a subject that I'm like, oh, wow, or get deeper or darker, or like one of the episodes I just finished is the one where the therapist, she gets back to her office and Ted is in there because he's run off the field because he has lost fucking control of his life.
Yeah.
And it occurred to me that it's like if you took The Office and you made it like more adult, right? If you made it less family friendly and more explorative of like real adult themes and issues that you wouldn't be able to even fuck with if you were 14 years old watching Ted go through this thing right here, you'd be like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's all about, to me, when I think about the comparison, it's kind of like it's the calculus of it all. So if The Office is 75%, you know, jokes, and then 25%, you know, like
friendship,
25% love. Like friendship, love, Jim, Pam, what is really making Michael Scott tick, you know?
Yes.
It's like Ted Lasso shifts that in the opposite direction, and it's like 50% jokes, 50% why is Ted Lasso so happy and optimistic? Like, what is this defense mechanism hiding? What is it covering up? What is deeper here? And then going more into the relationships and the team drama, and so it takes more of its time, and again, longer episodes, no commercials, to explore the things that The Office kind of like let simmer way underneath and never really had the time or the budget to go pick up and play around with.
Or maybe even the desire.
Yeah,
right?
Sure, like, sure. Yeah.
And we will get back to the Emmys in a second. I just wanted to since Ted Lasso did clean up, specifically discuss the show a little bit. And one of the other things that is obviously different about Ted Lasso, and that is an element of many classic television shows at this point, and is, we just did an ad read about the subject, is therapy, right? And when you started watching the show, when we all started watching the show, when you're a few episodes in, I don't think there's even an inkling of a fucking idea that it's going to turn that direction when it does. And even when it does, you're like, oh, maybe this is a one-episode story arc or a couple-episode story arc.
Yeah.
But they really go in this direction heavily. And now I'm not all the way caught up, and I know that very recently in the past couple of episodes. A lot of very serious things that have caused an uproar on Twitter and such have occurred. I've had to shield my eyes immediately and turn away. So I have no freaking clue what happens. But I'll be honest, I'm scared for the first time in a while watching a TV show.
The very last episode that you watched was the one where he has his panic attack and gets off the pitch?
I think so.
Okay.
If not, I've only seen... No, I'm pretty positive that's the last one I watched.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So I think I've watched two more beyond that.
Okay.
I think I've watched... I think that's either six or seven, and I've seen up to eight. So I've seen one or two additional ones.
Okay.
And nothing's really ringing a bell about, like, people have just been complaining about this season overall, I think. I've not seen specific instances picked out, except for the one.
Oh, I'm talking about some type of dramatic thing happened that was like a big shift in storyline with a character.
Okay.
That I was trying to avoid spoilers for.
Okay, all right.
Not necessarily the complaints about the season.
Okay, I gotcha.
I'll be honest with you, I have watched those dwindle, sort of, the past couple weeks. I don't know if it's just people were like, needed something to bitch about for a little bit, but I've certainly seen the shift in season two toward, you know, a little more serious, probably just overall. I don't know. Season one tackled heavy shit too, man. It got weird.
You've watched them all compressed. You didn't have this
the
year-long wait in between the seasons. So have you felt any, like...
quality drop?
Yeah. Do you feel like... Are you enjoying season two just as much as you enjoyed season one? Are there any differences that you're picking up on?
The thing I butted up against is what you discussed with us either...
A couple weeks back,
where the... Ted was over-Tedding for the first episode or two, where I was like, bro, they've put too many Ted lines into too small of a time frame, and he's overdoing it.
Yeah.
Then I got to the point where it starts to unravel for him.
Uh-huh.
And those episodes play beautifully now.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Because what you can see is that his defense mechanism is ramping up.
Yeah.
Because he is falling apart inside. So that now with the hindsight plays a hell of a lot better than it did at that point. And I understood those complaints as I was watching the episode. But then as I've gotten to 3, 4, 5, wherever I'm at now, the quality is on par with season one to me.
Yeah.
Now, they haven't landed the spacecraft yet, as I always like to say, as a disclaimer, like you have to finish it out. And they finished out season one very well.
Yeah.
In a way that had me super excited, and all of us excited for season two, and obviously finished with a slew of Emmy wins for season one. But I'm definitely not in a place where I'm complaining about this show right now.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think there's really a nit I could pick beyond that I don't like, that sometimes it seems like Roy is overdoing his voice like Batman, and that I was too stupid to pick up on them having Ted overdo his teddiness on purpose.
Yeah. Well... I'm going to steer us back to the Emmys if you're ready here.
I'm ready.
But I do want to drop a pin in Ted Lasso, obviously. I'll be finished with season two when we sit down to record next week. And whether you are, like...
I would be shocked if I wasn't.
You'll be there soon, if not next week, the week after probably.
Yeah.
And we'll definitely talk about...
Absolutely.
Talk about the whole season, because it's certainly remained enjoyable. But I can definitely... there are storylines that... And a couple of them you're not... I don't think you're quite at.
Or you've
only gotten the very...
I have a feeling I know
early,
one of them that's not going to go well.
Yeah. And some of them are just... Almost feel... I'm choosing my word carefully here. I'm going to say forced. And that's... It's just interesting because... And this is something that... This plays into what we've talked about, which is like... It's interesting when a show's very first season, like, puts it right on top.
Over-delivers.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it gets launched right up onto the pedestal. And so it has no...
And then we're all like, again!
Yeah. It's given no room to, like, do the roller coaster climb.
Yes.
You know, the tick, 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 and, like, get to its peak. And, you know, I think about a show like Homeland, for example, which obviously was not a comedy, but that, like... We closed season one and we were like, holy hell,
greatest show ever
that
made.
That was amazing. This is the best show ever.
Yeah.
Run it back.
Yeah.
And then like, it could never really reach that. And so I'm curious to see, and I'm curious to see
how they close
with awards as well, because a lot of times, even if the critical reception to a show or the audience reception to a show isn't as good, awards will continue to recognize it because it's like the new golden boy in a way. So that's I'm trying to think of a little bit. Even Game of Thrones continued to be nominated for dozens of Emmys every single season, even the shitty ones, even season 8. Remember?
Well, but they had also just gotten to this point where it was like they were on a different playing field. You know what I mean? They had kind of achieved so much. It was like, what are you gonna do?
And you just run back all the famous shows, right? Breaking Bad, Mad Men, Sopranos. It's like, once they were in consideration, they never left consideration. They were pretty much nominated every single year.
Right.
Comedies, it's less of that. I feel like
it's hard, man.
The voters are more willing to be like, you kind of fell off. We've moved on to the next thing.
Yeah.
And like boot you to the curb.
A comedy is harder to carry with this huge, with a huge audience, right? Like what we buy into as Americans, like on the most highest mainstream level, are shows that find a way to do a better mix.
Yeah.
Of serious stuff and comedy. Like Game of Thrones had a lot of comedy in it, but that wasn't a fucking comedy show.
Right.
She killed all of the all the innocent
people?
Civilians.
All the people?
Barrett, she set the whole city on fire. Spoiler alert.
She did it. She really did it.
Yeah, but so it's every year it's interesting to me to watch this element of the Emmys unfold.
Yeah.
Where they decide to put their love. And I'll say one of the things they really like to do is for shows like Ted Lasso, where they're hitting on every level. There's the simplicity of it, but then there's also depth to it. And then there are people who have a ton of experience with therapy, so it's hitting on an even deeper level for them. And they love to talk about it because they know even more about Ted Lasso than everybody else who isn't in therapy. I'm probably one of these people. And then there's people who are like actually into soccer, so they know even more, or like, you know what I mean, or played sports. And like there's all these layers to it. And then there's the Emmys, who are smarter than all of us. So like whatever it is, if they see the depth to it, that like it's just whatever they cling to when they catch on to one of these, man. So it feels like Ted Lasso is going to be one of those darlings that has a lot to live up to. And like you said, season 2 not necessarily receiving a great audience reaction is not in any way indicative of how the Emmys will shine upon it when the time comes.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is cool to see them get there doing proper because like, look, to compare it to The Office again, you had an A-list comedy actor from Hollywood movies jump into the television space and create a monster.
Yep.
In a good way. And that's what Sudeikis did. But the main difference is being Apple TV Plus or whatever the shit it's called, and the ability to do more adult themes and curse and the darker stuff in the streaming age. And it's just such a different game in the constantly shifting landscape that we've been speaking to, where I don't even know the categories anymore.
Yeah.
Or at least I don't know which category to take most seriously, which I feel like is always very obvious at the Academy Awards.
Yeah. And there clearly is, there's some shifting thought about that. The limited series, the outstanding limited series or television movie or whatever all is included in that at this point. It went pretty well last night. Did you pay attention to did you watch it all?
I watched the first like 15 minutes. I got in one bad Cedric the Entertainer sketch in before I bounced.
Did you see Seth Rogen deliver a flat monologue?
No.
Jokey jokes.
No. I saw his outfit, though.
I think I hate Seth Rogen.
You're anti-Rogen now.
I think I hate Seth Rogen.
Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like he's a pretty divisive guy now. Like, it's one of those things. You either love Seth Rogen or you hate Seth Rogen.
He, speaking of voices and like, you know, mannerisms you can parody, he's like got to be top five in Hollywood now with his constant wheezing and laughing and voice inflections.
Laugh.
And yeah, I don't know. It's just like you made the pickle movie, man. And for some reason you've ascended to like this level of Hollywood royalty almost.
Right.
You know, you're like nearing the Jon Favreau plateau.
Sure.
Almost,
sure,
in a way. Like, he's producing stuff. He's writing stuff. He's a big wig. He's directing. He's, like, doing all sorts of shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know if I like his shtick, man.
Listen, I can't say anything bad about Seth Rogen because he wrote Superbad when he was like 12 or something crazy like that. I feel like it's just, he's sort of in an Adam Sandler category for me where like...
And he was out there, he was throwing the dice too much?
Well, no, but I just appreciate that he's outspoken. Like, I think he does a lot of really cool shit with where he's at in his career, even if that cool shit is no longer making products that are... like absorbable without vomiting. The Pickle movie was truly terrible. Like I watched that whole fucking thing, bro.
I watched it too. I watched it on a plane.
And I'm just like, I still can't believe I gave up that hour and 45 of my life to watch Seth Rogen as a pickle do time travel.
Make pickles? Yeah.
What the fuck was that? But like, yeah, no, I get it. I mean, I definitely understand people who don't like Seth Rogen. I wouldn't sit here and defend him, but I can never say anything bad about him.
Yeah, yeah.
He's super hateable. I will say that.
What I was going to say...
Many of the goats are.
So this limited series category. Let me give you the nominations for Outstanding Limited Series.
Yeah, this is insane.
It was Mare of Easttown, I May Destroy You, The Queen's Gambit, The Underground Railroad, and WandaVision. We have not... By the way, we've not touched on The Underground Railroad on this
we
podcast.
Have not.
I have not watched any of it, but it's by big-time acclaimed filmmaker Barry Jenkins, and it is... about the Underground Railroad, and it is apparently astonishingly beautiful and also probably the most difficult thing you will ever watch.
Oh, yay. Anything that deals with slavery is obviously going to be a tough watch. Yeah,
and it does not pull any of its punches. I've not seen it, so I can't comment further, but...
I have noticed the hype.
And it's on me, by the way, but I am admitting that, like, when I know that something is going to be that heavy and difficult to pick up, it's obviously, like, lower on my list.
Well, for me, it's that I have to pick my spot. Like, dude, even with Dave season 2,
yeah,
there was a point where I was like, sorry, not right now, Dave.
Yeah, yeah.
And when it comes to slavery, like, there's certain, I mean, I think for all Americans, regardless of your background, it is a difficult subject to broach. And it is obviously tough to watch in very real fashion unfold on your television screen.
Each episode is, like, close to movie length as well. Anyway, I just wanted to throw out some props because I know it has obviously been... very well regarded. What I was going to say is, it was nice to see in this limited series, the love did get spread around quite a bit. So, Kate Winslet and Evan Peters both took home acting awards for their work in Mare of Easttown. And then...
That's cool that Evan Peters picked one up there.
Queen's Gambit won Best Limited Series and also won Best Directing. And then Michaela Cole won Best Writing for I May Destroy You. So
I got to say, Queen's Gambit winning there feels very fair. That was an A-plus project.
I feel like the awards went, like, you know, all three of those shows that I just named were fantastic. Ewan McGregor won Best Actor in a Limited Series for Halston, by the way. Anyway, I like the way the awards went because while I think Mare of Easttown was maybe a better overall show than Queen's Gambit, it's also a show that we've seen iterations of before.
Yeah, sure.
So it's like you're kind of like stacking on top of what came before it in a way.
A little bit.
You're tweaking and recrafting to make something new, whereas Queen's Gambit was just a total shock, had no business picking up the crowd that it did or being as good as it was or like
just flawless execution.
Yeah,
bro.
It was just flawless execution on a story that on the surface had been passed over, you know, many, many times. This book's been around since the 80s. It's been in development at multiple different levels.
Tough
movies.
Thing to make fun, yeah, honestly.
Exactly.
It's chess.
And it was fantastic. So
Sexy chess.
I liked that Queen's Gambit got that. The writing in I May Destroy You was probably its greatest strength. Because, you know, as I talked about last year a little bit about that show, it talked about, you know, some of the like sexual assault things and everything surrounding it in a way that I did not think could ever be broached, especially on television.
Or pulled off on TV, yeah.
And so it was just that is owed obviously to performances and directing, but most of all to just super brave and talented and unbelievable writing. So I thought that they did a nice job of divvying up those awards in the most stacked category of the night.
That makes sense. That's good. Yeah. I saw that, for one, it's still odd to me that The Boys is in Best Drama Series.
Yep.
But That's where The Crown picked up its seventh win for Netflix in Best Drama Series. The Crown, which I abandoned at least three seasons ago at this point, but they're obsessed with it at the Emmys.
They do love it at the Emmys.
I mean, it went up against A Handmaid's Tale, Admitted Resurgence, Lovecraft Country, The Mandalorian, which I'm not... Why are we nominate? Do we have to nominate The Mandalorian for stuff and pretend that it's worthy of that? I don't think we have to. This Is Us, Pose, Bridgerton, like, just, there's... by the way, how do they decide this? How come some categories have five shows and some have eight?
There's math behind that. I've heard about the math, but I can't remember.
As long as there is math.
Yeah, it's determined by like the number of shows that are put up for consideration. It's like a percentage of that or whatever.
Okay.
But so basically the more shows that are nominated or put for consideration for those categories, the wider the nomination pool can be.
Okay. Seeing that Hamilton won for Best Variety Special over Bo Burnham Inside makes me want to go commit a felony.
I was pretty upset about that one as well. Hamilton was getting just absolutely like smacked in all the other categories that it was put up for. And so I thought for sure that Bo Burnham's Inside was going to win that one. They just had to, they had to give Hamilton something, you know?
This fucking guy. It already existed. They turned the Broadway play.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Yeah.
The fucking guy lost his mind making this Inside for a full year.
He looked great, by the way. He and Jason Sudeikis were basically wearing the same thing, but in different colors. They both looked great. Yeah, Bo Burnham.
Oh, he was there?
Yeah.
I didn't know if he was going like full recluse now and not participating in the...
No, man. The sun is up, dude. He's like, yeah, I made that thing. Oh, did you think that I was actually depressed? No, I'm a 6'5", good looking,
most famous dude in Hollywood now.
Yeah. I'm doing great.
Okay. Well, good for him. That's exciting.
No, I don't know what he's actually like, but he was there and he was looking good.
So. Part of me just would feel better
if
that was his permanent state now.
Yeah.
Like he had to live like in Inside, but all like he's just in there in his whitey tidies fucking singing crazy, amazing songs.
Yeah. You know? The ratings picked up for this.
But I am serious. That's infuriating. Like the fact that Hamilton was given that award instead of him.
Alexander Hamilton.
I just fucking can't bear it.
Yeah.
Continue.
The ratings picked up for this Emmys.
Hey.
And
you credit Cedric?
I'm sure there will be many think pieces about what they got right this time.
How was the racial mix at this Emmys correct?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. There will be a lot of that. There will be a lot of like, you know.
Why are TV writers so fucking snobby? Why? It's just not necessary. We didn't all go to Ivy League schools. Like, yeah, can't you just talk about shows like it's fucking normal? That's why this podcast exists.
Here's my take on it. People are like coming out of the 18-month funk. There was, and also 2020 was so much. Everything. The new civil rights movement on top of the pandemic, on top of the election. Like, you think people had fucking time for celebrities patting themselves on the back?
Right.
No. Like, this
so
is
the ratings
this
is go up.
Yeah, this is inherently a frivolity that, like, we celebrate and feel good about in the boom times.
If we've got the time.
When the
and
world
the
fucking sucks. Like, no, we don't care about this stuff, man.
We didn't even get to watch half those fucking shows.
It's for somebody like me, if you're a pop culture person, if you do a podcast about it, like we're always semi-interested as a baseline.
Yeah.
But normal people that like maybe finally tuned back into an award show because they love Ted Lasso.
Yes.
Or they, you know, or we got a music festival back next in a couple of weeks in Austin. Like people are going to the movies again a little bit. Like people are in restaurants more. We're kind of, I know that stuff is still kind of bad, but for the most part, people are moving
starting
past
to move
it a
forward.
Little bit.
Starting like, to move forward.
We're
going to
live with this now. And I think that along with that is you will see ratings pickups in everything from award shows to sports to probably like, you know, just
movie
TV
ticket
shows
sales
and movie
as well.
Ticket sales as well. Like it's just a natural, this will just naturally occur as people feel more comfortable and less depressed overall.
Absolutely. I mean, honestly, the fact that I caught myself watching it, I was sitting there and I was like, am I going to watch the fucking Emmys this year? And Cedric the Entertainer came out and I was like, Cedric the Entertainer? is alive and well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And getting a bag for this, I hope.
And he shouted to the St. Lou, which was of course good, because you'll remember that Cedric the Entertainer was in all of the skits on 2002's Nellyville, because they both are
shit.
From,
yes, dude. Wow.
St. Louis.
That is insane.
So it's fun to see him shout out the STL.
I did feel like I was in a time machine, and then he made everybody sing Biz Markie's Just a Friend with him.
Yeah.
And I think I got a few minutes past that. That was great. That was cool as shit. It's just like, in general, I felt good that I even watched for a few minutes was a sign that things are returning to normal. Because even on a year that's not a total mess, there's some points where I'm like, the Emmys, because it's not my most fave to watch.
Right.
I always read everything about it afterward, but like, it doesn't get the same draw for me that the Academy Awards do. So, or the Golden Globes, frankly. I just, the A-list movie stars, they get my eyeballs on the screen.
Yeah.
That's what gets my eyeballs on the screen. So,
I like the Emmys probably, maybe most. Golden Globes is great because it mixes the two. You get TV awards and movie awards, so you get
the fun thing about it.
What I like about the TV stuff is that everything that won last night, I've pretty much seen all of it. I've seen Hacks, I've seen Ted Lasso, I've seen Mare of Easttown, I've seen Queen's Gambit, I've seen Hamilton, I've seen, you know, like, and most of the
stuff. I gotta bring up Hamilton.
Yeah, you know, just right.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm not as thorough on the movies these days.
I've now, noticed this is a big problem.
Golden Globes now obviously on our poo-poo list because of their whole host of issues. So way to ruin the fun, Hollywood Foreign Press, you bunch of racist dickheads.
But, yeah. How the hell did they end up being racist? The Hollywood Foreign Press.
Well, because they're all white.
They should have never named it the Hollywood Foreign Press.
They just should have named it the Hollywood Caucasian Press.
The white guys in Hollywood.
White guys in Hollywood. Yeah. Foreign white guys.
White guys behind the golden
foreign
trophies.
White guys giving trophies.
There you go.
There's the name.
There you go.
Yeah. Then at least they would have been upfront about it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, anyway, Emmys were great, ratings picked up, a lot of good shows, won awards, and yeah.
I was stoked to see Cedric the Entertainer. It is one of the really interesting things I'm noticing overall, obviously as a result of the pandemic that it was escalated a lot, is this human preference for more easily, quickly digestible programming, right? So like what you were just talking about, how like movies versus TV and where they fit into your consumption schedule.
Right.
And I'm getting this feel more and more from people I interact with, from friends, from family, from people on Twitter. Like, I think the pandemic just put us all in a place where focusing for long periods of time is harder to do. So, like, to sit there for 2.5 hours watching a movie, because all of us kind of had to keep it moving around the house and shit to keep sane, is a tough ask. And, like, frankly, I've started to feel it more and more, where if I'm at it's 7 p.m. on Saturday night, and I'm picking movie or TV show, Barrett, we both know I've got time for a movie.
Yeah.
It's 7 p.m.
Right.
I can make it to 9:30. I'm still picking a TV show so that my fucking poor brain doesn't have to sit there and pay attention to the same story for 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Because that's where we're at as a society. Everything has gotten shorter and smaller and 30-second fucking clips on Instagram. And it's the most easily digestible version of the thing is what people want. And for me, with the way that that has gone hand in hand with television being elevated in the way we've spoken to over the past few years, really, where prestige is the goal across the board, sort of, if you're not NBC or one of the networks that makes commercial-based television, it's gotten even harder for me to go want to watch a movie because I know there are television shows that it's like a movie but chopped up.
So this is a really good place to segue a little bit and talk about some of the shows that I've given a shot or
do it
or
you mean all of them, because the list you just gave us was like, how have you watched all of those already, dude? I'm still like I'm still waiting to go to Hacks because I'm so excited for it, but I haven't found it yet.
The other thing that I've been kind of thinking about recently that tags onto what you're saying there is that like. A lot of movies are okay to good, but they require, like you just said, this longer investment. You don't really get to like bail on a movie after 30 minutes.
So if the payoff isn't there.
Yeah. And so it's like
over time,
that's what I've been finding is that when most movies are Marvel or big tentpoles or whatever, and like other movies are things like The Little Things, which I was like kind of excited about, and then I kind of heard it was okay, not that good, not really worth my time, like blah blah blah. That makes it even more difficult,
right,
to take on that time investment, because you're like, man, what if this is just okay or kind of sucks or not that good?
Or makes me feel shitty. Or like, so it's one of those things where when the movie ends and you get the endorphin hit, 3 hours have passed. One episode of Ted Lasso might only be like 34 minutes, and you're getting at least one endorphin hit in that bad boy. And then you've got another episode you can watch immediately afterward, and then that's another endorphin hit. And it's just like that payoff and the risk reward is what you're speaking to. Like, the quality of television has caused us to evaluate it in the same plane as movies.
Absolutely.
Where we are now. And it used to be back in the day, bro, you just went to the movies if you wanted to see the best of the best.
Exactly.
A-listers have trickled down in TV.
And now I'm getting Mare of Easttown on my TV.
And what the hell? Like, that's kind of on Hollywood, not us. Like,
yeah, totally.
So I don't want to hear all this bitching about getting us to the theater, McConaughey. Stop making the best TV in the world and make movies instead.
Yeah, and that's another good point. And if it is, so I've been on this little run recently of like picking some stuff up, trying some new stuff that I've heard almost unanimously good things about and not really being all that into it. And it's like, no skin off my back. Like I spent 30 minutes watching that show. It wasn't for me. And now I'm out and I try something else. It has been weird because I feel usually if there's like enough buzz about something, if the right people have recommended it, and you know the court is talking about it, and like all these things kind of come together, it's pretty universally been a success. And I'm like, yep, this is tight, love this. And I've had a few misses and one kind of like half hit. So I'll talk about those quickly. One I've already mentioned, Nine Perfect Strangers. Got four episodes in, was like, this is not worth it. Like again, these hour long episodes that aren't really giving me anything, I'm done. This isn't that good.
Too many other options.
And there's too many other options. The next one that I tried was Reservation Dogs. Have you heard about this?
Yeah.
It's another FX on Hulu thing, I believe. And the premise is really cool. Love that indigenous peoples are getting a spot here. It's created and directed and starring, you know, indigenous Americans, which is awesome. I did not like the first episode. It felt very stiff. Wasn't really sure I was into the storyline. I definitely couldn't relate to it. Surprise, surprise.
Maybe just not for Whitey. Who the fuck knows? Happens to me sometimes.
And that one was to the point where I was like, I don't even think I need to see another episode of this. I know this is not for me. And it's back to next executive produced by Taika Waititi.
Dude, I did this with C. And I love Jason Momoa. But I got 20 minutes into that shit and went, I'll never watch a fucking another episode of this show, or another minute of the show, as long as I live.
Love Taika. This just didn't hit for me. And then the third one, which has been my half hit, is Only Murders in the Building. This is Hulu. This is Martin Short and Steve Martin.
This I haven't heard of.
With Selena Gomez.
Oh, shit.
And this is a 30-minute dramedy that is satirizing America's obsession with true crime.
Oh, good.
So, there's the first thing. This show, and I did say this on the Discord, feels like it was supposed to come out 5 years ago. Because I don't know about you, but I feel like one of the numerous things that the pandemic kind of put a damper on is our obsession with true crime.
Oh, it definitely switched it up. Wasn't looking for the hottest murder,
like not
the hottest,
sure,
most recent murder anymore, because I was like, you know, way too aware of the constant death and suffering of the entire world.
And also, like, you know, do I need to know about the guy that was crawling around in alleys and breaking into people's houses and smothering them with a fucking
pillow,
garroting wire, or whatever they're called, and then like chopping up their bodies when I'm in my house all day, every day, all the time?
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe just throw on another episode of The Office.
Yeah. So, and the big thing that is happening in this show is that they are making fun of Serial. The music even sounds very similar.
Yeah.
Because what happens
is, that's a dated joke.
The plot is basically is like there's this suicide in a very fancy Upper West Side New York apartment building.
Okay.
And these three different people that also live in the building and all come from very different backgrounds and kind of have like different things going on. The three big actors that I named kind of band together and they start making a podcast about it and seeking out clues. And there's all sorts of mysteries and twists. And I was out after the first episode, but I was told to keep watching by the Discord.
It sucked you back in.
And the story is pretty fun. And while I'm not sure that Selena Gomez is the greatest actor on the planet, Martin Short and Steve Martin, their chemistry like continues to get better and better every episode.
I saw a preview for this.
And they are like, obviously, weren't they both? It was them two and Chevy Chase that are the three amigos.
I'm pretty positive, yeah.
So like they go way back. Their brand of comedy is very, like, it's just funny. It's developed, for sure.
They've been doing it since you and I were fucking...
In a very old school type of way.
When Barrett and I were little kids, like, these dudes, that their whole thing was, like, played out already. Because it had passed its prime at even that point. So which is, like, they needed a 20-year gap
absolutely.
So they could come back.
I think one of the reasons it's working now is because they're both kind of in on the joke that they're old 70-year-old fuddy-duddies now.
They're washed up, yeah.
And that is working for them. And
that works for everybody. All you have to do is know exactly who you are. It's not that fucking hard. If you do, you can play it.
The episodes are pretty short. The mystery and the story is pretty enthralling once you're about four episodes in. And so I am in on this one. They're releasing it weekly, so it's again, it's like, that's another thing.
Which one's it on?
Hulu.
Okay, see, I'm 100% in on this, soon, because just premise alone,
yeah,
plus the comedic legends. There's a fucking podcast in it. Like, come on. Yeah. And murders? Like, there's the version of murder and true crime stories I want right now. Ones that are making fun of them.
So it's a little weird. Everything about it has kind of a dated feel, but it get past the first few episodes and it's an enjoyable watch. So
okay.
Shouts to Only Murders in the Building if you're looking for a shorter, lighthearted dramedy.
I finished Broad City. Speaking of Hulu.
All the way through.
Done.
Nice.
All the way through the series.
Okay.
And that is in my top 10 comedies for television, for sure. Them girls are fucking geniuses, bro. That show is hysterical. And one of the things that came up as I was watching the Emmys last night for several minutes was I watched a female stand up after winning an award kiss one of the fucking side characters from Broad City on the cheek and go up to accept. And I was like, that's the dude I watched jerk off on Broad City 2 weeks ago. Who the hell is that guy? And it turns out he's a writer. And he's like some fucking genius. He's done all kinds of crazy shit I didn't realize. But I didn't know this dude was who he was, is my point.
Huh, okay.
Can't remember his name. Not helpful at all.
And do you remember who kissed him?
No, but let me pull up Broad City's IMDb so that I can actually say who he is.
He's not the guy that's a SoulCycle instructor, is he?
Yes, Paul W. Downs.
Yeah, okay. So he's also on Hacks.
And on the writing team as well, perhaps?
Maybe, yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure, yeah. So he's an actor and producer known for Hacks, Rough Night, and Broad City.
Yeah, okay. While we're talking about that, I did want to throw in this note as well. Brett Goldstein, the guy that plays Roy Kent,
mm-hmm.
originally was a member of the writers' room on Ted Lasso. He is a British comedian and writer who's done like stand-up specials and stuff, and like has a whole body of comedic work that he's known for pretty well in the UK.
No shit.
He was on the writing team for Ted Lasso that developed into him playing Roy Kent. Yeah.
Wow. Yep. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Hope for all the writers out there.
And have you made the connection that Coach Beard is Brendan Hunt, who co-created the whole show with Bill Lawrence and Jason Sudeikis?
Holy shit.
So he's also like one of the head writers of the show.
And this is one of the things about shows that end up being super great, especially these little comedies, man, when the writing team is in it.
Is in it, yeah. Yep.
There's usually some magic there. But yeah, this dude has done all kinds of shit with his career, and I literally thought he was just this funny-ass character in this old comedy that ended a while ago that I'm working my way through on Hulu. And then he's on the Emmys, and I was just like, what? The fuck is happening? Yeah. This is amazing. His wife was like, gave big props to him, and they showed it, like, they did the whole thing with, like, showed him on camera, just sitting there, like, happily, like, that's my fucking wife, like, clapping and shit. It was amazing. Anyway, I wanted to say one other thing about the reason this year felt funky, obviously, with the movies, is, like, they didn't drop any, right? We and one of the other things that skewed us towards this phenomenon I'm speaking to, where I think television is preferred now, quality television is preferred to movies because of the time commitment, because the theater life is fucked, and because 2020 didn't drop any damn movies. We watched all three of the movies that came out last year. All of us did. Everything major got pushed back, and it just created this huge lull where it gave us even more of an opportunity to fall in love with all these amazing television shows that are across the 9 major streaming platforms that exist at this point. So, again, Hollywood backed itself into this corner by not finding a way around the pandemic situation quickly enough. It took fucking months, if you don't remember, before we were like, okay, now we're putting stuff out on streaming immediately. Mm-hmm. I mean, it took forever. So that was a big old dinosaur that is still, like, falling its way towards Earth or whatever. You and I will see how it ends in our lifetime, obviously, but because it's happening very quickly with technology. You know how these kids move. But it's fascinating to me to see this element of it where I know everybody I know watches Ted Lasso and knows who Ted Lasso is. I don't know how many people could name a movie that came out last year. You know, out of the people I in my social circle or whatever, I don't know how many people could name one. So that's the Emmys talk for 2021 and some Ted Lasso too.
Yeah. Okay. Now I'm circling back real quick to the Paul Downs thing. He is married to Lucia Aniello. So you saw her kiss him to go up on stage to accept the award for best directing for Hacks. They also won for best writing for Hacks. Those are the two awards that, like, Ted Lasso was nominated for multiple episodes, I believe, for writing and directing. And so it didn't win those. Hannah Waddingham won for best supporting actress, and Jason Sudeikis won for best lead actor, but the writing and directing went to Hacks.
So he won for that.
And so he was part of the writing team.
Yes.
And he co-created it with his now wife, Lucia Aniello. And he's very talented.
He's
very,
made it as high as you can in television from doing a weird jerk-off sketch in Broad City, which he also helped write, by the way.
I'm sure, yeah.
And I had no freaking clue that he was on the writing team, too. Again, goes to show you, the best comedies.
He is very funny in Hacks, too.
Best
he's
comedies
like a, he's
have
a side character, but he's very funny.
Just goes to prove us our point, though. Best comedies have the writing team on screen.
Yes.
Barrett and I will be back on Thursday with another episode of The Sopranos on patreon.com/oysters, clams, cockles. Ooh. We're, 4 episodes into season 4, I think?
Something like that.
Something like that. Get on Patreon today.
I don't know. Maybe you'd know if you were
on Patreon with us. If you go to patreon.com/oysters, clams, cockles now, immediately when you sign up, pick a tier and join to pledge to support the podcast, you will have access to the entire backlog of all of our episodes of The Sopranos that we've done so far, a companion episode of the podcast with no ads in it, exclusively for those of you on Patreon that is friendly to both first-timers and rewatchers. Barrett's a first-time viewer. I'm a rewatcher. Enjoy The Sopranos with us today on patreon.com/oysters, clams, cockles. And until Thursday when our next Sopranos episode comes out, or next week, salute. I can do salute on this show too, right?
Sure, why not?
Salute.